You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web and your number one source for after-show entertainment. Very good, The AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California. Presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies.
This is AfterBuzz TV's True Detective After Show.
We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show.
It's AfterBuzz TV's True Detective After Show.
What happened?
No.
There it is. Oh, there's your T-Bone.
It's not T-Bone for that.
I know, but he arranged it. We know.
Handsome
we know.
Family.
Well, I don't even think he doesn't matter. Welcome. We won't go. So
we're not going in circles again.
Yes, welcome to the AfterBuzz After Show, True Detective After Show, that is. We are finally arrived at episode 6, Haunted Houses.
No. You're so scared.
I know. Okay. Haunted Houses, episode 6 of True Detective. Another Cracker Jack episode. Right, Joe?
I'll back you on Cracker Jack. Yes. Right. Yes. Dude, you need validation for that?
I do.
Cracker Jack.
Do the young people in the audience know what Cracker Jack
is? No, I don't think they do.
Okay. Joined as always, I'm Joe Braswell. Thanks for joining us here for episode 6. I'm joined as always by the lovely Joe Sanfilippo.
Nice to see you guys.
And to his right, the lovely Julie Kearley.
Me. Hi. Hi, everybody.
And to her right, the lovely Nando Velasquez.
That's me. That's me. Hi, everybody. Hi.
All right.
And this is the loveliest crew in this room right now.
It is.
For those of you not familiar, we are lovely.
In the room. Thanks for joining us on YouTube. Thanks for joining us on iTunes. Thanks for downloading us. If you've downloaded us and you're listening to us right now, we've got lots to talk about. True Detective, episode 6.
Boom.
We finally, at the end of this episode, got out of 2002. So yes. I think that everything we see from now on is going to be good new stuff. From 2012.
As opposed to good old stuff.
As opposed to good old stuff from 2002.
Now it's good new stuff.
Or good older stuff from 1995.
Yes.
Well, we have stuff that will be happening in real time, in their real time.
Unless there's some flashbacks.
Well,
there might be some still flashbacks.
Right.
I don't know.
To explain what Cole's been doing.
Sure.
As he probably tells Marty what he's been up to.
Well, let's get this episode, because there's a lot happening in this episode. I kind of want to go through linearly and talk about some stuff here, because we have pretty much all the resolution we need from 2012 and 2002. All of our questions have seems to be answered as relates to what's happening with Cole and Hart. Not necessarily what's happening with the case, not necessarily what's happening, you know, with the mystery, but we do know all this sort of double talk back and forth from 95 to 2002 to 2012. We have all the answers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or do we not?
I think so.
I think we do.
For the most part.
Still a few little things.
Well, the first thing we open with is we do see the resolution to the to what happened to those little boys who unfortunately were unfortunate enough to pick the wrong dad,
the wrong girl's father.
That was a great scary scene, Joe Filippo.
For those of you who have children, I'm sure Mr. Braswell can attest to it, specifically daughters. Yes. That scene made a lot of sense.
It made a lot of sense.
I felt nothing but good job.
Yes, you were standing up cheering, weren't you?
Oh, it was beautiful. He looked like the ever-loving monkey fucking wrath of God. When he came into that cell after he beat the hell out of the blonde kid, and he's staring at that poor kid in the corner. And I'm like, you know what? But it's going to be quick and it's going to be over, but it's going to suck.
Sometimes you just got to catch, like, you know, we as black folks, sometimes you got to catch that fade. Sometimes you got to catch a beat down. Every now and then you just got to catch a beat down. And both those boys knew they didn't want it. And Hart was like, come on.
Here we go.
It's either here or I send you to prison. You get it in prison.
That's it.
Yeah.
I love that line. You tell me how I feel? That's awfully patronizing. I was like, oh,
it was all bad. But he was slow and deliberate. He got in the room. He's talking. You know, he takes off the wedding ring. I'm like, uh-oh.
Oh, no.
That is all slow.
That was the class ring. That was the...
Oh, the class ring.
That's
yeah.
the one that's going to break his finger. The wedding ring is relatively flush.
That's right. Yes.
Wow.
Oh, what's this? The cell's open.
Oh, no.
Oh.
Clearly, y'all are trying to escape. It's very sad. But he said there at the end that I thought was great. He said, you know, the man's game charges a man's price.
Love it.
And then afterwards, when he's out in the car, he's puking.
Well, that's the question. Is he puking because he is, you know, we want to believe that, you know, look, Hart's a really good guy. He hated to beat the shit out of a couple of teenagers. Or is he puking about thinking what happened to his daughter? Like, how did you read that, Nando?
I kind of felt it was the former. I felt that was an extreme emotion that just came through him to do that. It took a lot of guts, and it was a big risk. Mm-hmm. I'm sure the other cops in the police office in the station would probably vouch for it. That's the kind of thing I think that they would.
Oh, they
like you said, just like you guys understand it. I'm sure there are a lot of fathers in that station that are like, yeah,
sure,
you know. But it still takes a lot. I know if it was me, I think I would. There'd be some kind of remorse afterwards. Like, what have I become? Mm-hmm. And how could I have not stopped this from even happening? Because he knows, I think he knows in his heart that, that
he's
the daughter's to blame. That the daughter's, yeah, I guess so. I guess I did say heart. But I guess he also knows that his daughter's partially to blame for this.
Well, yeah, you can't. Oh, go ahead, please.
No, please.
Well, you can't take her out of the equation. I mean, it's not like the guys held her down. She was in the car. She got in the car. She was willing. So, I mean, you know, that's the thing. But I agree with you that he definitely, I don't think he was puking because of thinking about her. I think he was puking that he just beat the hell out of these two kids.
Well, this is a guy who reacts emotionally. You know, we saw when he slapped his daughter when he mm-hmm. found out what was happening. We saw how he reacted to Lisa with the other guy. When things happen to the girls in his life, he reacts emotionally and quickly. So this is something that he really sat out and thought about and made a deliberate decision to have this reaction.
Very true.
That was interesting.
And I think there's also a little bit of himself in there too. He's beating up these kids. It's almost like he's beating up himself because look, he hasn't really been the most
sure. Yeah,
perfect person.
And let's be real, he's you know, I want to talk about it later on, but Beth, like you know, yeah. Beth is that's his
perfect
daughter.
Example.
Like I mean that's the same exact archetype.
Yeah, so
only hotter.
I didn't know T-Mobile hired girls that hot. I had no idea. I'd switch carriers
Simmons.
If I knew.
This episode brought to you by.
I don't know. Lily Simmons from Banshee is not ugly.
No, there's nothing wrong with her physically.
Wow.
And you looked. I know you checked.
Anyway, next. I'm sorry. So yeah. But I like to give them a choice. He did give him a choice. He's like, look, man, you can catch this beat down, or you can, you know, you can go upstate. We can do it my way or your way. You know.
Well, I think anyone would have chosen.
Yeah,
you kick my
chosen?
Ass now. I'd rather. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the blonde kid got the better of the two. You know, because he went out and got it first.
The
other kid had to sit there and anticipate.
I'm like, I want to go first.
Yeah.
Because the other guy's gonna wait. And he's like,
watch.
He sees it. And he's like, oh no, I don't want that. The gloves.
Yeah, when he put the gloves on, I was like, oh, no.
Yeah.
There might be some exams going on.
So that happened. But anyway, that was a lot. That scene told a lot about Hart. And we did get some resolution as to how he handled that situation. So, and then the next thing we see is we cut to, aside from the detectives continuing with their interrogation, we cut to the scene, another sort of visit. We see Cole really working this case on his own.
Yeah.
And he goes to visit the guy
Terry Gidroy,
Terry Gidroy, which is a very 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 small but great scene there.
What a great act. He was terrific, man.
Right.
Oh, did I didn't take the actor's name down, which is a terrible thing for me to have not done, but he took that scene. He annihilated that was beautifully
he
done
did. He did. What did we learn there, Julia?
God, what did we learn there? We learned there that he was the parent of a Wellspring student, mm-hmm. which is
Tuttle School.
Yeah, it's a Tuttle School.
Queen of Angels,
right. Mm.
Yeah. So sorry, I'm getting a note over there.
Sure.
She distracted me. Go on. Go ahead without me.
No. Yeah. So we're beginning to see the picture here with these Tuttle schools, right?
Yes.
We're beginning to see if you're a kid and you're involved in Tuttle School, something bad is probably happening to you or around you. And so what is the connection here? And these kids have gone missing, these kids that are troubled, these kids that are, all these things are somehow connected to this school.
Well, the Wellspring deal, let's remind everybody about that. The Wellspring is these religious education schools in the rural areas. Instead of going to a normal school, getting bussed around. So the deal is that the state's going to reimburse the people who own these schools. And so you're going to teach this Tuttle curriculum, which is a it's a Bible-based curriculum. And so basically these are private schools set up and the state is paying for it. So it sounds to me like a shady scheme that some people are going to make a ton of money on. But, mm-hmm. But obviously it went a little more sinister than that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree with you. It sounds like these kids were, maybe they were getting an education, but it was almost like they were being processed or scoped out for something else.
Yeah.
By some mysterious, whether it's Tuttle or someone else within the organization.
I think we know who it is. I mean, I think it's no secret as to what's happening.
Yeah.
But what is yet to be revealed, which I don't really want to know, is the level of horror that's taking place here, because what we do know is it's enough to leave people, you know, the poor girl in the institution, what she saw, my man who's drinking,
Joel Theroy.
He was great.
That was always great.
Well, that was a great scene because it gave so much information about what we were just talking about right. Wellspring.
Yes.
Right. That's a little odd thing, but yeah, let's jump to that scene because that was great because we're talking still about this entire, you know, kind of Cole working on this case and he does visit Joel and another brilliant scene, right? He has, you know, he's drinking, he's doing his thing, and I love how McConaughey sort of Russ takes the drink from him, and then he goes, "I saw these pictures," and he's like, "Oh shit, here, you might need this more than I do." I love that.
Rough, man.
Well, I think it was a great call. I mean, he was drinking at 11 o'clock in the morning. Obviously, this man, something has troubled him,
right?
And his own fall from grace, somewhat. So,
you know, I really love. I love when preachers are characterized as having that crisis of faith. And when they fall apart, I think it really, it's interesting because there's so much need put on them. You know, there's by the entire congregation, like, we need you to believe 100% so that we can believe 80%, 60%, you pick a number. But we need you to be 100% committed. That's got to be a tremendous amount of pressure, especially in a rural area, and especially having seen what he saw. I mean, you know, and he just, how do you put it? He goes, you got two of his tents got vandalized and then he just lost heart, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's one of these things where, you know, you're beginning to get this picture painted of these individuals, men, women, but also these men who start out a certain way in 1995, and as their proximity gets, as they get greater proximity to this case or in and around the case, they become broken. So whatever's happening with anything involving this case or the Tuttles, they're going a little mad. I think we're seeing...
Yeah, going a little mad.
Well, like the Yellow King.
Like the Yellow King.
No, wait, let me...
Which was an interesting thing real fast. The cup he was drinking out of, that Thoreau was drinking out of, was a John Deere cup with a yellow stag on it. There's been a little buzz about that. So we get the Yellow King and we get the stag with the antlers, which is how we found...
Found the
girl.
Buzz.
Just throwing that out there, guys.
Let me toss a caveat in this whole everybody's getting broken that has knowledge of it. Except for Marty. Marty's driving a Cadillac. He's got a very nice suit on. He looks pressed. He looks prepped. He looks ready to go. And at that last scene of the show, the last shot, you got Rust shows up in that beat to shit Ford.
Yeah.
With such a great shot where they mounted the camera on the back. So you got
with the broken taillight. Oh, that's so broken taillight. Right?
And you can see Rust in the rearview mirror.
And you got the feel of how that Ford drove because you felt that truck vibe. You just felt it. It was brilliant. But everybody's jacked up except for Marty.
I heard Kerry Fukunaga's a genius.
Well, hold on. I mean, there's a point to be made. I swear. So it's just one of the things that Cole said in the office there. You know, you're all. He was yelling about how everybody here has got their head up their ass. Everybody here has got their eyes closed. I'm the only one who's awake, basically, is what he's saying. You know, and so the people who actually are awake, who actually know, they're broken. The people who are choosing, like Marty has been, to like kind of close their eyes and not see all of it and do what they're supposed to do, they're doing okay at the end.
Right.
And it's interesting. I think that's kind of like I don't know. I'm very. I love Nick Pizzolatto because everything he does is for a reason. There's nothing by accident, so you can read into everything, and it's probably true. It's probably some something to read into.
Well, we don't know if he's doing okay. We really don't. We've only seen him.
How about outwardly?
Interview.
Well, I could also submit that, just to sort of throw that back at you. Also submit that, like, this case hasn't really touched him in the same way that it has everyone else. In other words, he's still like the small contact he had with that situation when he opened that trailer and saw whatever he saw in there, and he went off and he just executed Ledoux. Like, that effed him up. Like, these guys are broken, and I can make the argument that he is broken because in the process, he is dead. He's got his beautiful family, but he's going off to go get some his things on the side because he can't deal with the fact that, you know, his job's so crazy. He saw what he saw, and now it's like it's a steady. This last 17 years has been all about trying to forget that moment. To me,
he's a man who compartmentalizes everything.
Right.
You know, he keeps everything separate in their own separate little worlds, which is sort of like a testament to the whole theme of this episode, a haunted house.
Mm-hmm.
What you're haunted with. So I think at any minute it's going to break, and I think we got a little glimpse of that actually with the walls breaking down and what's haunting him really coming out.
Right.
And becoming visible.
Oh, and speaking of haunted, let's jump back to, we see, you know, we finally get to the 2012 version of Maggie, looking, wait,
Yeah, 2002. Yes. Yeah,
2012.
Yeah, 12 interview. Yeah.
Looking fantastic, and but also looking. And she's, you know, the moment I saw her, I was happy to see her, and she was very short with those guys, saying like, you know, they're kind of being cute, and she's like, look, yeah, it's been in another life, it's been a long time navigating cruel men who think they're clever.
Like, yeah, I love that line. I used to exhaust myself navigating crude men who thought they're
awesome. Yeah, good. It's like enough. Cut to the chase.
No
guys.
Bullshit, kid. I don't care.
But which is great because she sort of has that sort of world worn, been there, done that, seen it all. Looking, get the sense that whatever she's going to say is not, you know, whatever she's going to hear is probably not going to phase her. Mm. But at the same time, immediately I was like, first of all, I knew that she's someone who I'd absolutely trust. But the moment she talked, I asked myself, wait, is she an unreliable narrator? And we find out she was.
She is an unreliable. Oh, yeah. And also, it's nice that it's interesting that we now have a third perspective for the first time. Right. Everything we've seen has just been through Rust and Cole's eyes. I mean, we've seen what they're telling the detectives, and then we see what really happened.
Sure.
And we're getting the same thing from Maggie, and it's nice to have a little bit of context to her.
Yes.
We've had nothing.
Yes.
The only thing we've ever seen is just her in the kitchen and her fighting with Hart. But we've never seen her on her own. And we get to see her on her own for the first time at that bar. Mm-hmm. And maybe we're seeing things through her eyes the second she started narrating. Because, I mean, it was interesting, that scene right after she discovers that the picture's on his phone.
On the phone, the T-Mobile phone.
Now I believe we're seeing things through her eyes, through her narration. And mm-hmm. she's sitting there watching Hart, who we've never seen him in that fashion before. He was very piggish, mm-hmm. sitting there eating his spaghetti, and I feel like that's how we were seeing him through her eyes for the first time, which was an interesting sort of flip.
Right, which is great about this, you know, this sort of the storytelling device, right, of being able to have, not only you have, you know, the three times as we talked about, but you have these multiple narrators, so these multiple points of view. Now we've pretty much established that what we're seeing on the screen is the real story, and then what we're hearing from the people is, you know, maybe they're unreliable, they're telling their different versions of it. But I do like when you do get to see their versions of it. I do agree. I think you're seeing, you know, it through their eyes. And frankly, you know, Hart wasn't that sexy. You know?
Well, you know, it's interesting.
Doing it for me.
It's interesting. I didn't write down the exact words, but when she was talking about Hart and Cole in the beginning, she said something about at least
Russ knew exactly who he was. There was no talking him out of it. Marty never really knew himself, so he never knew what to want.
And she kind of forgave him for that.
Yeah.
The way she was saying it. She kind of, someone's got to take medicine. So, yeah.
Sorry.
It's okay. But, yeah, so she seemed to actually forgive Hart in that moment. She said, well, you know, he didn't know what he wanted. Almost as if, like a small child or something. Like the way she forgave him, it just seemed like he was beneath her.
Well, it's but the way that she washed her hands of him too.
Yeah, she's done.
Yeah,
it's just done. I don't think that she's lamenting their marriage anymore at that point.
Right.
It's just very matter of fact. She's no nonsense. She's the one with the most common sense of anyone we've seen on this show.
But that line, just given at the very beginning, before she really gets into the story, her side of the story, just says so much on how she's going to color this picture.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if you really look at it and just look at it, I guess it just felt like there was something about Cole that she still, I don't know if it's regret or what.
No, respect. But she said it. Respect. Like, this guy's an honorable dude. Like, you know.
But she knows she messed him up because
she
realizes.
What's interesting is that we've seen what caused the dissension between these two partners, mm-hmm. and what was the catalyst for the end of the marriage. Yet we see Maggie and Hart in these 2012 interviews speaking very highly of Cole still.
Yeah. Because at the end of the day, I mean, look, you know, Cole, you can say what you want about Cole, but he is a straight shooter coming from the right place. He was everything that they said he was. He was. I mean, he's brilliant. He's honest. He's smart. He's direct. He's noble. He's all those things. So it's kind of hard to be like, say anything other than those things about him.
And I believe she said.
But he also effed your wife, so you can you can still have something.
Yeah. Well,
you know,
or she effed
less
him.
Less than glowing to say.
Or she effed him, really.
Yeah.
That was a great scene. We'll be there in a second.
But I think you can also make the argument that I think that this speaks to a lot of what I think, you know, Marty Hart's whole deal is. It's this sort of like, you know, all the time, Marty knows that he's effed up, right? He knows he's screwed up. Every single time he does something, it's almost like, I know. And Hart's like, you did that? He's like, yeah, so. Like, I get the sense that, like, I mean, I don't want to say that it was okay for, you know, for Cole to screw his wife, but, you know, 12 years later, I think he kind of was like, all right, 10 years later.
I deserved
like,
it.
You know, I know what happened. Yeah. You know, we fought in the street, and yeah, shit was effed up, and I get it now.
I get why I got, you know, I was in trouble.
And yeah. I think that's a dude thing instead of a chick thing, because a chick will hold a grudge to the day she dies.
Guys will kick each other's butt
ass. Dudes will kick each other's asses and then move on.
Well, that's
on.
The thing, is he had to get enough, he had to get enough in that fight for him to walk away feeling like he was okay.
Right.
Like, you know, that
and
you
Cole
know,
gave that to him.
He did, he gave it to him, and that's, that was the thing about that fight, he gave it to him. Yeah.
As opposed to earlier when he was kicking the shit out of two guys and they couldn't really fight back. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's get back just for a minute back to the case. We're just jumping back and forth as to what.
Yeah.
Let's get back to the case. So then we have, you know, we see that so Cole's really trying to, you know, he keeps taking us to his bosses, you know, like, this is what's happening and no one really wants to hear it, as always. No one wants to reopen any old ghosts. I'll reopen these haunted houses, but he's still working on it. So he has that horrifying visit, interrogation with the,
Medea, the marshland Medea.
Yeah.
Oh. You guys, I mean, familiar with the Medea story?
We were talking about Kelly.
Break it down.
Please. Well, you know, she was married to Jason, I think the Greek hero. She's the son of, the daughter of, I don't remember, Sisyphus? Not Sisyphus. He's a god.
Okay.
You know, he was
I thought you were going to bring it down.
But yeah, I was going to bring it down.
Like, what's happening?
Anyway, so here's Medea's deal. She kills, Jason leaves her because the king of, I don't remember, some other place that's cool, offers him a daughter. And so he ditches Medea and his two kids with her to marry this, to upgrade, essentially.
Sure.
And so in revenge, Medea kills her two children with Jason. So that's the Medea.
The marshland Medea.
But the marshland Medea obviously has some SIDS going with three kids.
I didn't realize Tyler Perry was so deep.
All right. Medea.
Never mind. I couldn't help it. Sorry.
I think that's probably the longest it's taken me to get a reference.
So he does it. He does interrogation, and it's this thing where he's like, "Look, basically, I need to know what you know before you bullshit me." And you know, and there's no better box man, no better man in the box than our man Russ Cole. But like he says, before you bullshit me, I need you to know that I know that you unplugged the monitor here. We know what you do.
38 minutes and was unplugged it back in. She was gone. That was the deal.
So you need to start talking to me. And that's not the thing that necessarily got him upset, but whatever she told him, all those, whatever she started talking to him about and telling like, you know, what was going on, the specifics and ins and outs, that had a giant effect on him. And this is part of the disintegration of Russ's faith in humanity. It's like that we just keep seeing episode after episode. We see this guy who is kind of already on the edge of like, you know, and I don't know, this is this big spreading marble. It's one big gutter in the sky. We start to see every episode why he's beginning to feel like that, because everywhere he goes, he's, you know, his faith in humanity is shattered. And he's with this woman who obviously tells him some horrifying things that we don't get to hear. And he tells her what, Joe?
If you have the opportunity, you should kill yourself.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's real, real rough on you. They're going to be real rough on you in prison.
It's chilling,
exactly.
And if you get the opportunity, you should kill yourself.
Right. Was that a McConaughey?
That was half of a McConaughey.
Oh.
Did it feel good? The word?
The McConaughey?
The McConaughey?
The McConaughey?
It was a McConaughey?
McConaughey, maybe. Not so sure. No, but it's that, because in that moment, like, I thought it was one of those kind of sort of TV moments that you get, or movie moments, when it's like, you kind of leave it for the audience. He's like, you know what? It's pretty bad in jail for you, and the newspapers are going to get bad, so I don't know. And he closes the door, but he says, so you should kill yourself. And I was like, oh,
it was
said it.
I'm literally yelling at my TV. I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Like, that was, but you know what? Yeah. But it's to me, that whole scene was so telling, because it's, you know, I think for him, he's like a guy outside of society. Like, I feel very much like he is in some ways that fourth dimensional guy. Like, he's looking at the things people are doing. I don't think he's not involved. He doesn't have the kids. He doesn't have the family. He's kind of living in a one bedroom shack. He's doing none of it. Doing none of the society stuff. So when he's out of it, I feel like he can kind of get what he wants from people, because he's not of the people. And so when Marty effed it up. He effed up the interrogation. He said, "Why haven't you ever heard of birth control?" And you know, and Russ like, "Get the fuck, get out, please. Yeah. Just let me finish this." And it was, I think it was a combination of like, okay, this guy, and that was, I think, informed their fight afterwards. Like, this guy, he's never going to get it. He's never going to be able to do. So type the goddamn thing. Like, that's your role here, because you can't do what I can do. You can't get with these people. You can't get them to give you what, give what they need to give.
I think you have to take a look at the way that Cole treats women. We all see the way Hart treats women, or at least it's a little messed up, you know, his morals, as we see even in this episode. But we also have to pay attention, I think, and this has to do a lot with the fall from Cole in this episode, the way he treats women. Because, really, he's never interrogated a woman like this. The only time we've seen him in scenes with women have been the prostitutes, but he still seems to treat them a lot better than what his philosophy is, which is everybody is guilty of something. He's always seemed to come about it when he's interrogating men or talking to men in that way. But this is the first time we see him really going deep like this with a woman. And it's not the first time that he has, in this episode, that he has a scene with a woman where there's a fall from grace. What? So I think there's a lot.
Well, that's sort of a testament again to the overarching theme of this episode, which is, you know, haunted houses. He's haunted by women that aren't even there. He's haunted by his ex-wife. He's haunted by his dead daughter.
Yeah, and he feels guilt for that for himself, though. They're not guilty of anything. He feels guilt for that.
And we see that Marty's also haunted by women. You know, but the women who are right in front of him that he can't control, because he can't control himself either. Yeah.
Very true, and we also see, you know, this is the fall of Hart, as we talked about, but we finally get to see what happened to this guy in 2002. Mm-hmm. You know, what happened to him. So we know he's mortified by what he's learning. He finally has a visit to the preacher.
Cole.
Thank you very much. He finally has a visit to my man, the
Tuttle.
And Tuttle, yeah.
And he's exactly where you expect him to be.
Tuttle of the neon effing cross.
Yes.
I just think that is such a beautiful little piece. Whoever designed that set needs a freaking round of applause all day, every day. Yes. You got a neon goddamn cross. That is so beautiful.
So
you're saying so much with that. That is awesome.
I mean, does anyone here think that Tuttle is not the most evil guy ever? I mean, like, it's a smile.
Well, we felt that from his first appearance, that there was something up with this guy and doing the whole anti-Christian task force.
Right. Oh, yeah.
So, and that's especially because of what it represents against Cole.
Right.
So, I think we all saw it.
So we see that, and then the last thing we see, the second to last piece we see is the visit to the asylum when he talks to the girl.
To Kelly.
Yes. Like,
talk about haunted.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Tell me, just give me your presence on that.
I thought that scene was kind of terrifying, actually. And
almost like horror genre terrifying.
A little bit.
It felt like The Ring or something. It felt like The Conjuring. Something is really.
When she whipped her eyes at him.
Whoosh, yeah.
I was like, oh shit. Whatever she's going to say, it's going to be terrible.
Yeah. But I'm sorry. Go ahead, Julie.
Anyway, that was just it was such a short scene, but really impactful, and it seemed to be really impactful on Cole's character as well. I don't know if it was reminiscent of the haunting of his daughter and seeing. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the girl that he saved,
mm-hmm. right?
In essence, he saved her, but really saved her for what? For this sort of life, this is atrocious.
But it goes.
She's catatonic. She's in this crazy world. Mm-hmm. But. He got to her, she spoke to him, and now we know that there's a man with scars who made her watch things.
A giant.
A giant. Well, it goes back to these unseen horrors that everyone has now seen, but the audience, thank God, that are so horrifying that it is breaking everyone you see in its wake down to nothing.
Yellow King.
And it's Yellow King. It's scaring the crap out of me.
Okay.
So you saw the previews for next week where Marty's watching and, oh, God.
Yeah.
God,
what is he saying now?
What's in the box?
So let's jump back into the last part of the story that we finally get some resolution on, is, which is what happened to Marty and Cole, mm-hmm. and what happened to Maggie and Hart. And we know both. It started with, Good old Hart got a visit from Miss T-Mobile, and you know, let's just say that
Beth, bringing it back to episode 2 where we first met her in the in the shacky, shabby bunny ranch.
She looks great in a polo too. She can rock a polo better than you rocking that polo right now, Flippo.
Excuse me. Yeah, it's true. There's no question about it.
Right. So
No question.
So obviously we have to recount that, but there, some stuff happened. You know, Hart did his thing. She keeps calling. She wants you know, Hart to do certain things to her.
She does. Well, let me ask you a question though. Now this is interesting because that scene was well put together. Like there's so much going on. Like, you know, you go out and you got to get a new phone and oh, that's a crazy hot chick. Oh, I rescued you. Oh, wow. Oh yeah, I haven't been feeling very heroic lately. You know, you're the hero. The people love you. You're such an amazing guy. And
he's out buying tampons for
all. He's emasculated.
He's emasculated. That's the whole thing.
Yes. Yeah,
you've got how many periods are going on? He's got 9 boxes of tampons. That was no joke.
He's got 3 women.
3 women, and you know, those of you who don't know, when ladies live together, my understanding is the cycles.
Right. Okay, let's move on.
He's also emasculated.
I got 3 at home too.
He's also emasculated in the workplace. You know, he's part of the star team, but really the star is Cole, and then he's a glorified secretary.
Exactly.
You know, okay, I'll type it up.
Right.
Yeah, you did the work. I'll get the credit. But so he's emasculated. Everywhere he goes.
You're hitting on the point. This is kind of why I'm not justifying Hart, but this is why Hart does what he does. He goes home, he's alright, he gets at the work, he's blah, 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 he's walking around, and then he sees Miss Polo Shirt, and, you know, there he is.
And that was a victory for him.
It was.
Yes.
You know, he told her in 95, get out of here, this is not for you, you can do better, here's 20 bucks, I think is what he gave her, whatever it was.
I love the down payment line that we were revisiting in episode 2.
And you know, and she tells him at the bar, there's nothing wrong with the way he made us. Nothing wrong with the way God made us. Whatever you're feeling about you want to do me, that makes a lot of sense.
God gave us these flaws. He doesn't see them as flaws.
That's right.
And then she said, the universe forgives all. And the next thing you know, they're in bed.
No doubt.
Right.
Yeah.
And
the universe forgives all. So, if the universe forgives all, let me just sleep with you.
When Marty falls off the wagon,
right.
Yeah. He's going to bring some burrs. He's going to do some chiskas. He's deep.
That's what I said when you said it's a victory for Marty, but, you know, we all got to see Lily Simmons naked, so it's a victory for all of us.
And then that little devil bobblehead thing at the end of the scene that he looks up and he sees this little devil looking
down. So let's get to the consequences. Let's get to the consequences. You know, she finds a cell phone. She decides in that moment.
Technology has evolved so much.
In that moment, she's going to take this into her own hands. She tries to go to the bar and make that move, decides that that's something that we know that she cannot do. So what does she do, Julia?
She lives out my fantasy.
Oh!
He's the pull-up champion of Boone County, Arkansas.
I'm well aware.
Lily Simmons isn't the only one making people happy in this episode.
There's a little something for everyone.
Yeah.
A little something for everyone. There so she goes to Cole. She knows where, she gets super manipulative, like mighty puppet master. And she goes to Cole because she knows that's going to finalize everything.
Yes.
Yes, it will hurt, Marty the most, but also, there's no coming back from that.
Yeah.
You know, she left him once before. That didn't stick.
Right.
This is going to stick, and it's going to sting.
Right.
But something you touched on, and I think in our last discussion about True Detective, was how once Marty feels that his women have been
defiled, tainted,
he wants nothing to do with them. It's sort of, he has like this virgin whore complex.
That's it. He's a Madonna or the whore. That is his deal. Either I put you on a pedestal, you're my wife or my daughters, you're my family, it's my responsibility to protect you, your virtue is sacrosanct, or you're a whore. And that is it for him. And I think that, and so it's interesting when his wife is going to go, when we have Maggie going to go and get some, she orders the exact same drink that Beth orders in the bar with Cole.
Only she's vodka trying martini. A little bit harder because she gets hers extra dirty.
Extra dirty. I thought that was interesting.
She just seems a little bit less in her element.
That's a pretty clear seduction move. I'll have a vodka martini extra dirty.
Extra dirty.
I thought like the guy's name on the bar was Bruce. I thought, oh, poor Bruce is going to get the shit beat out of him when this is done.
Yeah, but
no. But that scene,
didn't go down that way.
Bruce didn't get laid.
Poor Bruce. That scene in Cole's house was so heart-wrenching also for McConaughey.
Yeah.
For both involved, but just his realization after what he had just done and what it means and why that just happened just like ruined me.
Well, on both sides, on Maggie's side, like I said, what Cole has said before is that everybody's guilty of something, but I don't think he really saw women that way. So all of a sudden, she pretty much has been the most innocent person up to this point.
Yeah.
In his life, You know, he's always treated her with respect to the point where Hart got jealous, and he's always kind of used her as a confidant. And here she comes, and she uses him. She F's him. He does not F her. She F's him. And then she
In
more ways than one. Then she pretty much says, I didn't think I could do it. I'm glad I did. Now he can't come back. Now I just use you to get rid of my husband because I couldn't do it myself.
I got to say.
Awful.
And he was mad about that.
He was pissed.
And this is his fall from grace. And we said it before. What made this man look the way he does in 2012? What we figured he lost hope for some kind of reason, and who would have thought that it was because of Maggie?
And you know,
it's a cumulative thing.
It's a cumulative, but Maggie was the straw that broke.
I think you're right. I think there's a lot to that. I think that you can look at humanity and go, okay, well, everybody's screwed up, but this person's doing it right. She's married to a tool, but she is awesome. I really like what she's doing. And then when she comes and flips you like that, you're 100% right. Yeah. That'll probably push you over the edge. And kudos to the acting, man. That scene worked, and that scene on paper could be a mess.
Yeah, like, she seduced him. She corrupted him.
They got him at just the right place. He was just drunk and manic. Tampon. Oh, so well done! Such a good scene.
By the way, another tampon. When the chief called Hart a human tampon,
Yeah.
I thought that was awesome too.
More tampons.
But it didn't end there in terms of the way she let. I mean, she knew what she did, but she got to be able to sit, you know, Hart down and say, "Have a seat, pal. I got something to tell you. I know about your little photo." And I did some stuff too. It was hard. It was cold. And you know what else? It's the best
sex I've had since the kids.
Since the kids. before the kids.
Hold on. I haven't been fucked like that since the kids.
Oh,
Jan.
Thanks, Joe. I was trying to leave a little bit from the imagination.
Why? This is an HBO show. It's rated R. If you watch the show, you can probably listen to the podcast.
So that doesn't feel too good to hear that as a man. Mm. No one wants to hear that.
No, you might. You might choke your wife for a second.
But exactly. But she calls him out as she does every episode. It's like every other episode, she has some sort of like, you used to not be such a chicken shit. You used to not be this. This is the best I've had since this. You're not a man. And so she kind of got the final nail in the coffin.
Was,
I haven't been effed like this since before the kids. And it was by your partner.
And he called her a
scoreboard.
Whore, and she called him a coward.
Yeah. That was the final blow.
Yeah. She called him, he called her a fucking whore, and she said, you're a coward.
That was rough.
Yeah. So Maggie did have the last thing there. Mm-hmm. So this all comes to a head when we see the guys at the station, which was one of the great fight scenes
in a long time. Did you read that they turned on the Rocky theme?
Yeah.
Well, let's talk what happened first when we get to behind the scenes. But like we get there, obviously, he's doing his thing. He hears that Russ is in the parking lot. He takes off the rings. He takes off the gun. Thank God he could put
no doubt
away. That's smart.
He's smart enough for that. Mm. But it's also back to that, like, you know, we're going to handle things like men. And he ran out there and tackled him like Lawrence. I don't know, like Lawrence Taylor.
I gotta say, I love the way they shot that scene because that was awesome. You know, you could have shot it where he tackles him and then we see him on the ground, but we don't see that. We see them hit concrete.
Yeah.
That looked like it hurt so bad.
And that McConaughey left his feet.
You know? Oh, it was awesome. Yeah.
So anyway, so that happens. So then when they get back in to settle it, they don't want to talk about it. Neither of them said nothing happened. It's not about it. They kept it to themselves, and they've done that for the next, you know, for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
They just didn't speak.
Yeah.
And so now we see that's the story that they're both sticking to that story of like, so both, you know, my guys interrogating them like, it has nothing to do with the wife. What is this dust up with you guys? Like, no, I don't know. Nothing happened. I still like him. So that's cool that was just sort of a thing that happened between these two guys that they kept to themselves this entire time.
And that last moment where he says, I quit. I'll send in my letter. Nice hook, Marty.
Nice hook out the door.
Well, before that, he's like, that felt like the ultimate fall from grace for Hart, because he already said, like, what's wrong with, all you people are corrupt. What's wrong with that? I forget the line he says when
he
leaves.
He says, like, fuck this world.
Fuck this
again,
world.
Again, it's cold, though. You said Hart, but it's cold.
It's cold, I'm sorry. You know, he's the fuck this world. He's like completely disgusted with everyone. He gets suspended. He's trying to bring people to justice. For that, he gets suspended.
Yeah.
He's trying to keep his buddy's marriage together. For that, he gets seduced by his wife. He turns into one of those people. He then gets his ass kicked, and he deserves it, and he gets then suspended. So it's like, yeah, fuck this. He quits.
Yeah, that's it. I'm out.
I don't doubt it. So,
well,
go ahead.
That's what I'm saying about Rust in general. He seems like he's outside of all of this. And so when all this is what it is, I always feel like Marty is all of us and Cole is like what we could be if we were untethered and on a mission. And I, you know, Marty is all of us with all of our fallacies, all of our hang-ups, all of our weaknesses. You know, when she says, she calls him on the phone, Beth calls him on the phone and says, I want you to F me in the A. Like, there's no doubt in any of our minds that he's going to do that because he's weak. He's going to give in to that. Yeah. Even though he knows it's going to destroy his life. It could. It has the potential to destroy his life.
I'd be much stronger than that, actually.
Yes, Joe. I know. You.
I could. So.
But I mean, anyway, I know we don't have much time.
No, we're done. We're actually out of time. But I do want to say we have that last question, Nando.
I just want to say, yeah. I mean, what was great? I love that one shot of Cole throwing Hart into his truck and hitting that tail light. And like you said, you already set up the last shot. But what I thought was beautiful about that last shot was that it was never repaired.
Never repaired. Yeah.
And awesome. That was from 2002. So he's had that truck for 12 years. He's been holding on to that for 12 years. And here he is with it, still carrying it like a dent in his armor.
Right. Exactly. It's just personal to him too. He doesn't want to get that. This thing hasn't, also signifying this hasn't been resolved.
Yeah.
You know, none of this has been resolved. So I'm not fixing anything.
Nothing
I'm not
is
cutting
solved.
My hair.
Nothing
I'm not
is,
fixing this.
Yeah.
That moment when that is resolved. One question before we get out of here on that. When he approached the car, did Marty draw his gun?
Yeah, he checked to see if it. I don't know if he checked to see if it was loaded or
did he have his gun?
No, it was afterwards.
No. Yeah.
Oh, it was afterwards. I'm
it
sorry.
Was when he said, "You follow me. We're gonna go have a drink." And then he came back and looked at the Cadillac. He goes, "You're gonna buy me a drink." Or he says, "I'll buy you a drink." Then he comes back and he says, "You're gonna buy me a drink." And then he checked his gun to make sure his gun was loaded,
which was interesting. Yeah,
because you never know what's gonna happen. Which brings us to what? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, because the other detectives have been putting all this stuff in his head.
Right. Like, so maybe he's a serial killer. Yeah. Maybe who knows what he's been doing.
Yeah,
but the thing is, like, the thing that's true is, Hart is like, I know this guy. And Maggie's like, I know this guy. And I think that they're both right. I mean, I think that Cole is Cole and he's going to be fine. And so the real Cole will come out. And this is maybe where we can get into predictions.
Your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
To find out what we think is going to happen next week. I know we saw some previews, but what do you think is going to happen, Julia?
I think we saw him in the previews. We saw Hart flipping out. I think it's going to have to do with his eldest daughter. I think his eldest daughter is going to be in the mix here somehow.
Oh, no.
That's what I think.
Nando.
I kind of like that. One thing I wanted to bring up earlier was the two guys that Hart was beating up. They had these black shirts on, and one of them had like an angel, which I thought was really interesting. So I'm almost wondering if it's that. I'm going to predict, though, you said that we're stuck in 2012. I still think we need to see what happens to Tuttle, since he apparently died 2 years before. So I don't think the flashbacks are over. I think we're definitely going to see what happens to Tuttle.
Do we know what happened to McConaughey's daughter?
Yeah, car accident.
Run over by a car.
Reliable now?
Run over by a car, right?
I thought it was a car accident.
Run over by a car.
Are we satisfied with that?
No.
I've never been satisfied with that.
I think that the resolution, the beginning of the end of Cole, I think this is we know that that's the beginning of the end of Cole. I think we'll get that flashback.
Mm-hmm.
That's coming. I don't know if it's coming in episode 8 or 7, but that's coming. Flip over for you.
I was wrong about last week. I thought last week we were going to find out that all these guys were hunky dory in cahoots.
We all thought that.
A little too neat.
That was a good prediction.
It's fun.
That was
not
solid.
That good.
That's what I call them predictions.
But
we'll call Nick about it.
Do you have one for this week?
I do. I think our guy in uniform. I don't know if you guys saw him. He was in the interrogation. In there with the major in that second scene in the office or third scene in the office where after he'd gone and braced Tuttle. I think that guy is going to wind up being, and I don't really know who he is. He was in uniform the first couple of episodes, and we never really saw much about him. I feel like he's going to be something about the super secret Christian task force. He's going to be
come back.
We're going to see some interesting stuff with him.
Interesting.
All right. Super secret Christian task force.
SSCT.
Well, that's it for us, man. Thank you, folks, for joining us for the last 42 minutes to discuss True Detective episode 6.
It's never enough.
We will be back next week to do episode 7 for all of our loyal. Wait, do you want to get some quick shout outs? Go, Nando, quick.
I don't have it set up.
Oh.
I have a couple YouTube people. I have Flamethrower, Skylar somebody, John Reiners, Terry Pitnick, Christopher Reed, Stephen Reese, Rob Simon, a whole bunch of people. Thank you so much
Downloading, commenting, listening. Thank you for making us
just YouTube.
Number one show on AfterBuzz for all this time. Thank you for making us a number, you know, anywhere from 2 to 10 on iTunes Top 300. We appreciate that. And that's all we got. Joe, where can we find you?
You can find me on the Twitters at Joe Flippo, JoeFlippo. And my website is josephsanfilippo.com.
Julia?
Find me on Twitter. My name, Julia Carely, JULIACEARLEY. Same thing on Instagram. And then here at AfterBuzz with these jokers.
Nandizzy.
You can, well, first of all, shout outs on iTunes to Johnston's, Hoo Hoo, and Bilbo Baggin.
Hoo Hoo?
And, yeah, Hoo Hoo, and Margin something. And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Nandovel, NANDOVEL, and a couple of shows with these fine fellows.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Joe K. Braswell, along with shows with you guys as well.
Yeah. We got Hannibal Bates coming Motel. Up and Bates Motel coming Hannibal. Up. And then Bates following, Motel.
Following.
Later tonight.
Blacklist.
Blacklist. And Americans.
Lots.
Lots. Oh, my God.
Thank you for joining us. We'll see you again next week.
Woo!
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.